This is the Rich Eisen Show.
They have facial recognition everywhere.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
I walked in and I put on a mask.
No.
Just to walk through?
It was a wise move, right?
Wise move.
Earlier on the show, Seahawks wide receiver Tyler Lockett. Coming up from the Showtime drama Your Honor, actor Bryan Cranston, NBC Sports Boston Patriots insider Tom Curran, Bucks wide receiver Mike Evans. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air here on this Friday before Super Wild Card Weekend. Super. And it is, in fact, jam-packed. Bryan Cranston will appear on this program in just about 15 minutes' time. It's going to be dynamite. His new show, season two of Your Honor, starts streaming on demand tonight and returns on air on Showtime on Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern time. It's a hit television show. He's just dynamite. Great celebrity true or false setup for him. Mike Evans in hour number three from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we've also got what's more likely for the Super Wild Card Weekend coming up. We are here live on the Roku channel and also the Rich Eisen Show radio network powered by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com or just stop by. Mike Del Tufo and Chris Brockman in their spots, TJ Jefferson in his spot, and then, you know, as we discussed opening the program, do you remember the Halley Comet? You remember that?
Yeah.
When we were kids?
That's true.
Halley Comet, you saw it in the sky,
and
they were telling
years,
you, hey, look up because, you know, it's possible you may never see it again, right? Yesterday, we got an update on the latest comet to fly across the sky that we may never see again. It's called Patriots Press Release Comet. That's what it's called. It's called Patriots Press Release Comet. I think NASA has now officially dubbed it that. If that's the government body that dubs comets names. Press Release Comet from New England. When they say they're going to interview for an offensive coordinator, what is that? Patriots offensive coordinator. Does that exist?
You know, I'm not sure.
Well, that's why we have guests. That's why we have expert guests calling into the program from NBC Sports Boston, Tom Curran back here on the program. Tom, I saw this press release and I texted you immediately. I saw that comet in the sky. I'm like, I'd see if Tom saw it in New England himself on the East Coast because I saw it on the West Coast. You know, you see it?
I was still processing myself and, you know, it is interesting. There's a lot of different reasons for it. Just to cut to the chase, on Monday I reported that Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft reported that they had had their season-ending conversation, and that during the course of that conversation, Belichick charted a course for 2023 that was more encouraging, including offensive changes that were going to take place. Didn't want to get into firings or reassignments or anything like that, and he never really does. But I think what Robert Kraft and the Patriots did last night was, to borrow Belichick's phrase, they did what was best for the football team. Mm. Explain that we're not going to go titleless. Explain that we're going to gain some traction on offense with an experienced guy. We're not going to have a shell game with who's calling the plays and who's the offensive coordinator and what are you guys talking about? I don't know what you're asking. Just cut to the chase, Bill. So I found that fascinating in that Robert said, can we get this done, you know, and make it look a little more organized and less cryptic?
And you, what is your reporting on how collaborative that conversation was, Tom?
They were both in line. I think that there comes a point where Bill does fully comprehend, and I don't want to speak out of turn, as he says, speak for yourself, but I think that he understands the pecking order. As much latitude as he's been given over the course of time, as much money as he makes, which is more than any professional sports coach in America, perhaps the planet, I think he gets the idea that, okay, in the end, it's his $6 billion team, and if he says, I want my season ticket holders and the rest of the NFL to understand that we're going to have a more cogent plan and a conventional plan in place, c'est la vie. I'm with that. If we have to send a release out to do that, well, I don't love sending releases, but especially when it's an admission of, yeah, we're doing it different this year because last year didn't work. I'm sure he didn't love it, but there was no, I'm not over my dead body
right
type of comment.
What is the Gerard Mayo portion of the sentence of the press release? You could break it down by sentences since there's just two of them. So, do you think the draft was more than two sentences, Tom? Do you think the draft was a little bit more verbose? What do you think? What do you think?
They just don't want to. The draft was more verbose. It was. I do have that on high authority.
Okay.
The draft was far more verbose, and it lost a little weight on the way to the final copy.
So what does the Mayo portion mean? What do you got for me on that?
Especially when you're detailing that there's not even a contract, but you're moving forward with negotiations. Now, I reported a little while ago, as did Phil Perry, my co-worker, that Gerard will not be taking the interview for the Cleveland Browns defensive coordinator job. He still is in line to perhaps take a visit with the Carolina Panthers to discuss either their head coach or defensive coordinator job. I don't know if that's going to happen, but really, in 2017 into 2018, when Josh McDaniels was interviewed by the Indianapolis Colts, he had never heard word one from Bill Belichick about what he wanted Josh to do in the organization going forward. And so when he went and took his interview, and the Patriots hadn't lifted a finger to make him feel as if they wanted him still around, he took the job. And then they said, well, we actually would like you to stick around. And he's like, well, why didn't you tell me that 2 months ago? Say something to make me feel as if you want me to stick around. So they don't want to make that mistake again, especially with a guy like Mayo, who is as charismatic, persuasive, intelligent, and all the things you really want, I think, in a head coach.
So is that what they're also envisioning for him in his future?
I would be out of line if I commented that is something I'm certain of.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they'd love to maintain right of first refusal on him. You know what I mean? So that if in 2026 Bill Belichick has broken Shula's record and he's stepping aside, the Patriots still have him under their auspices. And he's not got a wandering eye to going someplace else. With Josh, it was different because it was 2017 going into 18. And Bill was 66. Now Bill's 71. The team's in a reboot. Tom Brady's gone. You can certainly see the end of the road a lot more clearly than you could have in 2017, 18.
So then let's take the last portion of our conversation, Tom Curran.
I will not preempt Brian Cranston.
No, I know. A couple at a time here. So who's the offensive coordinator? What do you got for me? You know, there's a bunch of names we've heard. What do you got?
Put your chips on Bill O'Brien.
Okay.
He wants to come back to the NFL. I believe ownership is fond of him. I believe that Bill Belichick values him. He's worked with Mac Jones in the past. And Bill has New England roots. I think that is the hands-on 2-1 favorite.
Well, then you just led me to my second question, because Scott Zolak locally there mentioned how he wouldn't be surprised if Mac Jones got traded. Certainly with Derek Carr seemingly available as a free agent, when that cut comes, there's no question the cut's coming. You got Jimmy G, potentially. We all know that was the guy who he envisioned succeeding Brady way back in the day anyway. So is it possible that whatever the, you know, Mac was doing behind the scenes or occasionally bristling about the quick game with very easy to read lips, rankled Bill in a way that he's ready to move on potentially after just 2 years? What do you think?
That would be a cutting off your nose to spite your face move, even if that did exist. I think there's a little bit of Mac stabbing going on.
Mac
out here.
Stabbing. I like it. What a name. What a phrase. I love it.
Thanks, Ben.
I love it.
Just in terms of, look, he did a good job all year long, sucking it up with guys who don't coach offense and not getting pissed. And eventually he did get pissed. And now that those guys are being scurried out of their jobs, there's legitimate replacements being brought in. I think there might be a little bit of behind-the-scenes airing of grievances going on. If you're Bill Belichick and you walk up to Robert Kraft and say, let's trade Mac Jones, I'm Robert Kraft, I'm saying, but didn't you in July at the beginning of training camp say that he was a very good player and then he made a dramatic improvement in the offseason? So, Bill, you're saying that not only did we cost ourselves a season with the offensive coordinator setup, but we ruined Mac so bad, we have to trade him now.
Hmm.
I don't think Bill is walking down that road and making that knock on the door saying that to Robert Kraft. It's idle time filling space, if you ask me. No.
So then, So then, before we button this up, then Tom Curran, then to what do we owe the whole play calling 2022? What's the word for it? You could call it debacle. I mean, you could absolutely do that.
Debacle, disaster.
Or decision from Belichick, because the subtext of it is that Bills lost his touch. You know, like that is the subtext of it, fair or not. And the unfair portion of that could be proven in the fact that they had a win and in scenario in week 18, a very tough spot, Buffalo, regardless of, you know, the year, it's a tough spot to win. And then this year in particular, with everything that was happening with DeMar Hamlin and the team and wanting to win for DeMar, and they take the ultimate first punch with giving up that touchdown on the opening kickoff and took the lead in that game, only to give up another kick return that lost the lead for good. But, I mean, this team on the defensive side of the ball balled out and damn near still made the playoffs anyway. So Bill is still great. The question is what the hell happened? What is the ultimate explanation for it?
He overestimated himself. He overestimated Matt. He overestimated perhaps Mac Jones. He underestimated how difficult it would be to not only put Matt Patricia in that position, but also to change the offense. They changed the offense. And then they had to go back to what they were doing because it didn't work. They scored 28 touchdowns through 16 games. They hadn't been that bad since 2000. Bill underestimated the teams that he was competing against, overestimated his own acumen and the acumen of Matt Patricia, and probably overestimated how satisfied his players would be with a, "Don't worry, I got it," attitude. They do want answers. They deserve the answers. Mac Jones had 14 touchdowns and 11 picks and was the butt of many jokes in 2022. And that's not what you're looking for in your second year in the league. And it's not what you're looking for with a guy on a rookie contract. So I think it was, people like to bandy about the word arrogance with Belichick. I don't love that, but I think he did overestimate himself and underestimated the curve that they were trying to conquer.
And then the last crystal ball question for you, Tom, is when the offensive coordinator is in fact named, and Belichick then appears for the next time at immediate availability, will he flat out own that the coordinator, that the person hired is in fact the offensive coordinator? Or will that question have to come from you or anybody else? And it's a coin flip as to whether he actually acknowledges the title of the person hired. Tom, what do you got for me?
Reading the tea leaves, in my experience, they're going to put out a release when Bill O'Brien or whoever is hired, and they'll say this is the offensive coordinator. And when we ask Bill if there's an offensive coordinator, we just released a statement on it. I mean, what are you talking about? Of course. What are you talking about? Are you happy with Bill? Yeah, I mean, I know Bill for a long time. You know, it's okay. Moving forward. We'll see how it works out.
I'm just glad Robert Kraft has heard my pleas all season, Tom.
There you go. He heard the fans. This is definitely a message to the fans, right, Tom? I mean, that's basically what
it is. I think, yeah. Right. Definitely.
Tom Curran, thanks.
Nice. You'll be at the Super Bowl?
Yeah, we'll see you. You'll be there?
Yeah, I'll scurry out there.
Okay. We'll stop by. We'll see you. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, brother. You're the best.
They had a Brian Cranston. That's exciting. And Mike Evans and Tyler Lockett, who I thought the Patriots should have drafted in the second round in 2015, and they didn't. And they never got a replacement for Edelman. And that's another reason the offense wasn't that good this year.
And you. Don't forget you. You're the star of the guest list, too, Tom Curran. Thank you. Take care of yourself.
See you guys.
That's Tom Curran.
Tommy.
All right, let's beat it. Brian Cranston next on the Rich Eisen Show in studio. Don't you dare move.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast, where each week we watch every episode of Smallville, a show that changed our lives forever and perhaps your lives too. I'm Michael Rosenbaum.
Hello, I am Tom Welling.
What was the sign off now?
Always remember Talkville.
That's it. Always hold on to Smallville, folks.
We love you. Couldn't do it without you. We've got a great season two coming up.
Catch up with season one or start season two on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, not just this program, back on the air, but the man sitting to my right, he is the Emmy Award-winning actor, Your Honor. Season 2 debuts on streaming and on demand on Friday, and it returns to air Sunday at 9 p.m. on Showtime, where Season 1 ranked as the top debut season ever on Showtime. Bryan Cranston, great to see you, man.
Rich, it's always good to see you. And the boys.
We're all back.
The clubhouse.
Look at us.
Baby. Look at us.
We're back together.
Yes.
We're back together.
So good.
And Your Honor is back on the air.
Tonight. Why are you wearing the same shirt today as you did yesterday? That's what I want to know. I mean, it's a little... This is a big shot show.
I understand. You know...
Come on.
You know, it's the dry cleaning.
Is it?
It's a dry cleaning issue right here on the program.
You got home yesterday. You took a sniff. You going, oh, no, I can wear this again. Yeah. I can wear it again.
One more day.
I
get one more.
It looks good. It matches the color scheme of the program.
Yeah.
Look at us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good to see you here, sir.
Good to see you.
And
too.
Great to see you back on Your Honor. What a show, man. What a show. And again, like I asked you the last time when you were promoting it in its infancy, about you could pretty much choose what you want to do, why you chose this one. And it is... You're so great in it, and it's just yet another intense drama that you are part of an incredible cast. So I really give it up to you about what you're... What you see with that clip and everything else that we just discussed.
Yeah, what got me on to do the first season was the idea that what would you do to save the life of your child? And you're a dad. You guys are dads.
Right.
So it's like you would do anything to save the life of your child. And you would compromise your principles, if need be,
yes,
in order to do that. And that's what my character did. And unfortunately, it ended in a tragic way. Everything that he went through, all the compromises that he made, it was for naught. His son died. And so in this season, we turn it around completely and explore, God forbid, what would that be like if that happened to you? You would be changed forever.
Right.
And I was really interested in diving into that kind of grief and despair to see what that felt like.
Right.
And that's where this goes. But it has a nice trajectory. So we got some good surprises, and it's actually very exciting season.
Right. And that's why, you know, it's kind of difficult to conduct an interview about a show like that, because I don't know what you want to reveal, or there's a lot of spoilers or anything like that that's coming. So what do you got for me?
There's a lot happening. Rosie Perez joins our show this year, and she plays an antagonist to me, as if I need more.
Yes.
And she's formidable and really an amazing actor herself. And Michael Stuhlbarg and Hope Davis and Dreen Ward Hammond, who plays Big Mo, the head of the street gang. And just there's some really terrific, talented people who have we really get to explore this season more than we did the last one.
Right. And I like Michael Stuhlbarg so much. Yeah. I mean, he was great in Fargo. He had a nice run in the Fargo TV show. Boardwalk Empire.
Yes, he did. He's
spectacular in that, too.
I first met him years ago when he played Edward G. Robinson in the movie Trumbo that I did.
Yes.
So it was lovely guy.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And again, season 2 of Your Honor debuts streaming on demand and Friday, and returns to air on Sunday, January 15th at 9 Eastern on Showtime. So here we go.
Here we are.
What sports have you been watching or been able to catch up on that you want to hit on? Anything like that? Your Dodgers? Are you a Laker guy at all?
Yeah. Well, yes.
Okay. Right.
It's a tough year.
Right.
So, I'm a homeboy from all the sports, you know, Lakers, Dodgers, Rams. Kings, you know, the Kings are playing actually pretty well.
Yes,
I don't know
how
much, you know, cover that much hockey.
What sport is that again?
Oh, God. Look at what we do. You know?
No, we do. We do. Okay. We do. Yeah. We do. I'm from New York City, so, you know. I mean,
you're Rangers. How are you?
When I was able to go to Madison Square.
You can't go anymore.
I don't know.
You're not banned. You're just on notice, right? I got to tell you, though, there's something badass about being on notice about anything.
Don't you think?
It heightens your danger.
Yes.
You know, it's like, ooh, Rich Eisen, I didn't think he was, oh no, he's on code 2. Seriously?
Eisen's code two. Eisen's code two. Eisen's code two.
Talking to, people are talking and are suddenly talking into their cuffs. You know? So maybe I should walk in to tell them that I'm the danger, right?
Oh, I see what you
did. See what I did?
Yeah.
Did you like that?
That was good, actually.
When I am the danger.
When I said it, I didn't know.
You
that,
didn't. I didn't. You're out of that.
I was
so
not
out.
Thinking the catchphrase.
You're out. You're out, right?
Yeah, that's so. It's so last decade. You know, I mean, yeah, no. Breaking Bad. I mean, that's going to be the opening line on my obituary tomorrow. And I'm happy that it will be eventually, whenever that is.
Well,
it was a great experience.
Well, I've got, you know, we play a game called Celebrity True or False Brian around these parts. And I've got we've got many more for you here. I'd like to hit you on some of these right here. Brian Cranston is here on the Rich Eisen Show, and here's some again terrific production value of Celebrity True or False with Brian Cranston.
Celebrity true or false?
You can't handle the truth.
There you go. That's the production.
That's
building.
It.
Yeah. What do you think?
It's short but sweet. I like the font. It was like the Hollywood sign.
Yeah, you picked up.
I noticed.
I picked up on it. We're putting down.
Yeah.
Did you ever work with Nicholson? Has that ever happened?
No, never have. But I'd like to speak to him someday.
Very good.
He's retired now.
Yeah, he is.
I'd see him at a Laker game, of course, and kind of
give a little heads up.
Give a little heads up, okay. And in with his shades, and he's always sitting back, and he'd do this. How you doing? How are you? Yeah.
Oh my gosh. All right, first one up, Brian Cranston. True or false? One of your first gigs was a Preparation H commercial. True or false?
Oh, come on. That is false. Oh, gosh.
Look at that photo. That's very Roy Scheider.
Isn't it?
Don't you think right there? If I could pick it.
Roy Scheider is really good.
What do you think?
Or what's that talk show host who had those big red glasses? What's her
Sally
name?
Jesse Raphael.
Sally Jesse Raphael.
Sally Jesse Raphael. Good call.
Bill Donahue. That was good. Too.
Good call. Yeah.
So what happened? This was truly
It's called
first?
A job, Rich. I know you haven't been job hunting in a while. Oh, Mr. Employment, steady employment guy. Well, you're not, you know, actors, you gotta say yes. Well, this was, at least
yes.
I was a spokesperson. I wasn't afflicted by hemorrhoids.
You know what?
Well, in real life I am, but not in. Yeah,
if I was afflicted, I would trust you to give me the right advice.
I would put that ointment on and go, here we go. Let's take care of this little problem.
I didn't mean the administering of the preparation. I just meant the advice of, like, you should try.
I'm a full-service spokesperson. We don't just stop with talking about it. Come on.
Is that why you brought your alcohol as
yes,
well?
I bring my alcohol so I can soak my finger. It kills. It just kills everything.
Dr. Cranston, I have this burning sensation. Wait
my alcohol. Thank you for bringing
dos
that
hombres.
Up.
I love it.
Dos hombres. Mezcal.
And you brought Aaron one of your bottles in already.
He's got
look
it.
At that.
Yeah.
Look at TJ.
He sent it in
right
like a couple years ago. Wow, back at Captain.
Very good.
I'm very, very happy that you have that.
Okay.
It's going really well.
So then it's true. It's true.
It's true.
Okay. That was your first commercial. How much did you make for that? Do you remember? One of your first commercials?
The Preparation H paid quite a bit because they ran those suckers. I don't know. I probably made $20,000-$30,000 on it.
Okay.
Yeah. Enough to carry you for a while, for several months, so that you don't have to go get a busing job at a restaurant or something, you know.
Next one for you, Brian Cranston. True or false, you did your own stunts on Malcolm in the Middle, including wearing a suit of 10,000 live bees.
That also is false.
Okay.
That never happened. Oh, God.
You keep on having the photo proof.
Yes.
But those are real?
Those are real. That's 10,000... I forget the count it was, but they would extract the pheromones from the queen, and they would put the droplets all over me wherever they wanted the bees to go.
Yes.
Then they'd open up the traveling chutes, and the bees would just start swarming, and they swarm forever. In order for them to stay off my face so the camera could recognize me, you take a little of the bug spray off or whatever. And they put it all over my face there so that they would crawl. Oh, no, I don't want that. And they'd get off it.
Wow.
But it was about 2 inches thick of bees.
Oh, my God.
Now, you'd think that it would be a horrible experience. And it was. it wasn't. it really wasn't.
Confirmed.
Do you remember going into the Sharper Image stores and sitting in those chairs? And it's like, oh, and it's warm, and you're like, oh, this is nice. That's what it felt like.
No way.
Because the bees are constantly moving, and you're wearing them, and it was warm. So it was. I was being lulled into submission, and now I'm a lover of bees, you know, and I got stung twice.
That's okay. That was that was a follow up. That was a follow up. Stung twice.
Bees anatomically, if you touch them, their tail end just comes up. Okay. They can't even control it, and that's why you can get stung by a dead bee. You ever walk around a pool?
Yeah. There you go.
Step on something. It's like So I got stung once in the shoulder when they were getting him off. But once when I was doing that whole thing and I had to stand very still, one got between my legs.
Hey, now.
And I got stung. And I said, oh, I think I got stung. Because when you're wearing bees, Rich, the chance of being stung is pretty high.
Yes.
You're wearing bees, for God's sake. So, but what I realized is that the sting of a bee is not really painful. It is mostly the shock that gets you. But when you're wearing bees and you get stung, it was literally, did I get stung? I did get stung, and the beekeeper comes over ready with a little credit card thing and a thing to scoop it out. He goes, where is it? I go, in my scrotum. and he goes, can't help you.
You're on your own.
That's exactly what it is. Can't help you.
Yeah. All right. That said, next one, Bryan Cranston, true or false. You were initially opposed to wearing the tidy whities in the iconic first scene of Breaking Bad, and you had to be talked into it. Is that true?
It is.
Ish?
Yes. That's also true. Because I had done 7 years on Malcolm in the Middle in the tidy whities, because he was just a big boy. And so they had the tidy whities here, and I thought, oh, I just did that. But then I rethought it, and it's like, you know, Vince wrote it for a reason, and I think it was a stunted growth for this man as well. He stopped caring at a certain point. And there's something, I don't know, for the men who still wear tidy whities, stop listening. But there's something a little pathetic about a grown man wearing boy underwear. It's like, I don't, it's not.
Certainly if they have a matching animal top to go along with
it's
it.
It's like Granimal. That's right.
You know, exactly.
Yeah.
But so you eventually.
I eventually said, okay, there was a reason. Let's go with it and see. And it turned out to be the right call.
No question about it. And then another moment that's a true or false. Is it true or false that your famous pizza that you threw on the roof in Breaking Bad was completely done by accident, but so good that Vince and the producers kept it in and used it as an establisher in future episodes? Is that true?
That is false.
Okay.
It was not an act. It was intended to go up on the roof. What was unbelievable is that when they handed me the pizza, of course I read it and I go, he flings a pizza and he's so angry and it goes on the roof. Okay. when they handed me the pizza, it was the size of a Buick. And I'm holding this thing with two arms going, why did you put every topping on top of it? This is heavy as hell. So I had to fling it and I go, oh my God, to get it up there, I have to do it about, you know, you kind of guess how.
Sure.
And I can't throw it up there purposefully.
No. Right.
It has to be an accident. So I said, I think I can make it to about here. And they had a camera up there shooting towards us. And I just got angry and flung it. And it went flop right in the place that was perfect.
One take
right there. And I heard, oh, gasps. But I continued the scene. I didn't look at it. I got in the car and drove away. And I said, what was that? What happened? What happened? What happened to the pizza? He said, you could not have placed it any better. You could not have thrown it any better than that. We got it. It's fantastic. Let's do another take. What are you talking about? I said, no, no, you got it. Let's claim victory and walk away.
Well, the crazy thing is we did have Vince Gilligan in about a month ago, right, or 2 months ago after the Better Call Saul finale.
Yeah.
And I told him about the scene with Rhea Seehorn and how she was on the bus, you know, and her crying and how amazing she is and was in the scene and how moving it was. He said that he made her do another take. He made her. It's like after it was all over, that's what he told
Vince Gilligan is a very cruel man. I want to just make that clear. He's cruel and abusive. Demeanor. Yeah, know, that's just the cover.
That's what it so it makes sense that he would say, great job, let's try it
again. Let's do it again.
Were you able to do it again? The pizza?
No, we didn't do it again.
Oh, okay, good.
No, that was it. I thought, come on.
It can't be perfect.
Yeah.
All right, last one for you, celebrity true or false. It kind of marries everything together. Is it true that you shot an alternate ending to Breaking Bad where the entire series was a nightmare for the for your Malcolm in the Middle character, Hal? Is that true or false?
It's true. And there's a picture of it. Had this idea to do it, and it was written by one of our writers, and it was funny. It was just that he woke up and
like Newhart?
Yeah, kind of like Newhart, and said, and I was as Hal, and she's there, and I go, I just had this terrible dream. I was a drug dealer, and she's going, oh, stop it. You can't do any of that. No. And I had a really hot young wife, too. Yeah, it was fun.
Are you serious?
Yeah, we have it somewhere. It must be online somewhere.
So,
never intended.
No, so you just did it as a gag, is what you're saying.
It was never intended to be part of the show.
Because, you know, people think that, you know, that it might have been intended to be part of the show. But you just did it just for you know, what's and giggles.
Just for, the what's and giggles. Yeah. Is that how you speak at home with your kids?
Yeah.
The what's and giggles.
No, I use the real words because I'm a terrible father.
I am so fudging mad at you.
So I have this sign. It's a big cover. Best Dad Ever. It's a big cover.
That's so sweet. Did they make that for you?
Did
you make that for yourself?
No, I think it's...
Wear the tidy whitey.
It was probably purchased in some Encino pharmacy for $6 and packaged as a Father's Day gift to me. I think, Brian, if I had to be honest.
As generic as you can make it.
This, along with eye drops, were purchased in the same... Yes, I think.
Yeah,
I do have to, if you don't mind, ask about the Better Call Saul finale.
Yeah,
and because you know I'm a fan of the show, and you in it, and to see Walter White one more time, and the scene in which they put it together, is to say the least, a remarkable choice for the scene to be placed in the basement hideout of the disappearer.
Yeah.
And his basement. And I'm wondering, when you first got the script, were you surprised by the choice of that's the scene that they chose, the location that they chose for you to make a reappearance?
No, I can't say I was surprised. Vince Gilligan always has a way of surprising you, even for someone who was really well informed on that series. He constantly surprised me and where he was going, but also leaving the little breadcrumbs so that you can trace, it is justified how it got to that point. He's an amazing maze maker. And so he didn't surprise me. It was delightful to do it. We were brought in under the cover of darkness. Aaron Paul and I were flown in one April, 2 years ago, private airplane, at night. We taxied over to the corner where nothing else was except a black SUV. We come down, we take two steps on the tarmac, and we're in the car. Luggage goes in, close it, we drive off. They take us to a two-story Airbnb. He has the top apartment, I have the bottom one. And there we stay for 4 days. Basically, we get in the car, we go to work, we come back, we stay in the... We cannot leave.
For secrecy purposes.
That's right. And there was a wall that went around the entire property, and I was able to do my walks as if you're in a prison yard. And I...
Like the Great Escape?
Yeah, it was like... And I would walk, and it would square in the rectangular shape, and I would walk and circumnavigate the entire property within the wall. And each time I did, I had this notion of touch the wall. You go to the other side. You touch the wall. And then I had a little nail, and it starts scraping. I'm going to get out. Shawshank or Great Escape or something, yeah. Wow. But it was a completely secret, and we weren't allowed out anywhere.
And, again, the scene that is so remarkable about it is, again, that we're taken back, obviously, to Breaking Bad. And it's before you decide, as Walter White, to break out of the plan to disappear and go and rescue Aaron Paul, Jesse. And there's a moment in this scene when Saul asks you about a time machine and you refuse to. I mean, perfect Walter White response.
Yeah.
I mean, it checked all the boxes to try and see you in character again, that scientifically, that's an absurd notion. Yeah. If you want to ask me about regrets, just ask me about it.
Right.
And then he asks you about it, and you look at a watch. And the watch is what Jesse gave you for a birthday, your 51st birthday, in the show. I wrote this down. And I didn't catch it the first time. But that is the regret that you have and that you're about to act upon as your character. And to put that Easter egg in the last episode of Better Call Saul,
it's
mind-blowing.
Yeah.
It's just totally mind-blowing.
He thinks of everything, unreal. But he agonizes on his way to thinking about everything.
Yeah.
In fact, on the set, when he is directing, he has a habit of taking his index finger and just tapping. What is it? Did I get everything? What am I missing? What am I missing? What am I missing? And it's he's going to work a hole into the middle of his forehead.
Yeah.
But he's that way.
He doesn't miss anything.
He cares about everything. So.
And then just to complete the fanboying, to give the ultimate line for the Better Call Saul series to you, the payoff is, you were always like this, is, I honestly paused the show and I'm like, wow.
Okay,
because that's the reason why Saul became Saul was himself. Oh, so you were always
like that,
and it's the way you delivered it too. They put you on camera, you look down, you're by yourself,
it harkens back to what happened to my character, going from a relatively peaceful and sweet guy to being an irritable, aggressive, unsavory kind of character. He's impatient with him. He's on edge constantly, and that's what happened to Walter White. He went from that Mr. Chips to Scarface, and along the way picked up some annoying habits.
Well, and again, with Your Honor as well, where the character who was in the first episode is far from the one that we just saw in the clip to start everything as well.
Yeah.
And so, but obviously, it's different shows. It's awesome, man. It's awesome.
It's a lot of fun, and I hope people tune in this weekend and see it.
Well, I mean, again, it was the top debut season ever on Showtime.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like Showtime's just opened up their doors.
No. It's we're very happy with that, and the cast of Your Honor is terrific, and we have a very exciting season.
Okay, and how can people get that that alcohol to your right? How can we do this?
Dos Hombres is available pretty much anywhere.
Okay.
Reserve Bar, Drizzly, you can go to Total Wine or BevMo or ABC Liquors. I mean, there's any number of places around the entire country. And it's delicious.
That's you and Aaron Paul put together?
Aaron Paul and I are the Dos Hombres.
Okay. Very good.
So this is for you and your crew.
Like the Pollos Hermanos.
Open it up and have some cocktails.
Thanks again, Bryan Cranston.
Thank you,
really
man.
Appreciate
good to
you
see
taking
again,
the time and coming down here and spending time with us.
Thank you, bud.
Truly cherish it.
Good to see you again.
Bryan Cranston on Twitter and Instagram at Bryan Cranston. Of course, Your Honor, Season 2, streaming and on demand tonight and returning on air Sunday, January 15th at 9 Eastern Time on Showtime. Bryan Cranston here on The Rich Eisen Show. Mike Evans of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers still to come. If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. That's true when your business is growing fast. Even more true when there's a lot of uncertainty, like the times that we live in. And guess what? Not every business is in the dark. And if you're in the dark, then you need to join the 33,000 businesses that already know their numbers because they use NetSuite by Oracle, the number one cloud financial system. NetSuite gives you visibility and control of your financials, planning, budgeting, and of course, inventory, so you can manage risk, get reliable forecasts, improve margins, everything you need all in one place. NetSuite helps you identify rising costs, automate your manual business processes, see where to save money, know your numbers, know your business, and get to know how NetSuite can be the source of truth for your entire company. Right now, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. Head to NetSuite.com/richradio right now. NetSuite.com/richradio. NetSuite.com/richradio. Nick in Vermont will take your call. What's up, Nick?
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
What's going on?
Big fan of the show. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I wanted to get your guys' opinion on how the NFL structures its playoff seeding. It seems like every year the NFL sends a subpar team to playoffs that gets to host a home playoff game because they won their division. Personally, I would like to see the NFL just send the top seven teams per conference to the playoffs, regardless of division finish, like what the NBA does. And I want to get your thoughts on that.
No, thank you. Division games have got to, and I'm sorry, I'm being honest. Division games have to matter. They have to matter. The NFL is different than any other league in the fact that one game is 1/17th of your schedule. And winning your division has to mean something. And I totally get what you're saying, that a team that's got 12 wins, like the Cowboys, should not be made to go visit a team that barely finished above 500.
I agree.
And that just because they lived in a much more high rent district neighborhood in the NFC East than Brady in the NFC South. I totally understand what you are saying, but when it comes down to it, certain games have got to mean more, and your division has to mean more, and it causes teams to stay in it. Not it's an anti-tanking device as well. Not that the NFL tanks, but it's a different sport. And as a matter of fact, I would say the NFL's system of seeding is much better than the NBA or baseball, where it's just like, you are going to be slotted here, you are going to play this team when you advance, instead of reseeding. The NFL reseeds. I like the reseeding. You know, so I thanks for the call, Nick. Call back.
Yeah, Nick. It's a great point.
I appreciate it. Oh, no. I like the reseeding. You know, in the NBA, there's no reseeding in the playoffs. You advance, you play this team. Well, why are they doing that? Because
that's how the bracket is.
Yeah. We all love the NCAA tourney bracket. They don't reseed.
I like the reseeding.
Imagine if the NCAA is reseeded.
That'd be awful.
Well, it's different sports. But I guess I would like the NBA. The NCAA tournament is what it is. I get that. Reseeding for the tournament.
That might be hard. There's 64.
Right. Like, and you also have to move people around the country. You know, you send them to a spot, they've got to finish through on the bracket. I get that.
Yeah.
Professional sports, why doesn't the NBA reseed? I love the fact that you reseed in the NFL. If you win this game, if the Seahawks win this game, we all know they're going to go, obviously, to the one seed.
No bye weeks in the NBA. No buys for the one,
right.
One seeds, obviously.
I'm a reseeding guy in pro, but not collegiate. Not certainly not college basketball.
Yeah.
The bracket is what it is. The bracket stays like bracket before. Far. Like
it
the
is
rent
what it
and
is.
Godfather Part Two.
The rent stays like before.
We have to be the show that references the Godfather the most.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
Proudly.
It's not even close.
Proudly.
I'm not saying like it's bad. I'm just...
No, it's good.
Let's get them all. Let's hit them all now while we've got the muscle.
We are definitely the only show anywhere that's got a Frank Pantangeli drop.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
I mean,
Pantangeli.
While we got the muscle.
That's right.
Not in one because Clemenza wanted too much money to be in two.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Come on.
What do we do?
What was he doing?
Exactly.
Big regret.
He's trying to get all he can.
Take the cannoli.
Do we have John Harbaugh soundbites? We do. Okay. So John Harbaugh was asked, that Lamar Jackson tweet where he gave out exact specifics about his knee injury and what it is, what grade it is, and how it's approaching another grade, and how there's inflammation. Coach, your thoughts?
John, we saw Lamar put out a tweet yesterday about his injury. Did you know he was going to do that, or did you kind of find out when we did?
No, I didn't know anything about that. I haven't paid much attention to it.
John, does the team agree with the assessment of it being a grade two, borderline grade three?
Well, you know, that's the thing. It's not something that that we can comment on. You know, the nature of an injury specific is really the only person that could comment on that is a person. I mean, there's laws along those lines. We're educated by the league in terms of what we're allowed to say and what we're not allowed to say. So that's nothing I could ever begin to comment on.
He went hip on us.
Come on, John.
I'm telling you, it's a weird tweet to send out. It's weird. And, you know, John Harbaugh has done an exemplary job of talking about every time about this injury, how much he loves Lamar, and it's got everything to do with him wanting to win. He loves Lamar. The team loves Lamar. And for him to come out and say, this is exactly what's wrong with my knee, and I don't think I'm going to make it. Somebody must have said to him, hey, you got to let the fans know how much you're trying. Somebody might be sitting there thinking you're jaking it because you don't have a contract. And the Ravens haven't given a whiff of that from them. The whole thing is weird. But there's no question John knew the tweet existed, and he could basically say, I'm not paying attention to it. But he did confirm. He had no idea. Well, he wasn't sitting next to him when Lamar hit send on that, I'll tell you. Because he would have stopped that thumb. It's weird. And like I said, if Big Ben had tweeted it, we would be going all in on him. But it sure looks like Lamar might not go. Hour three coming up. He also said, because I do have the benefit, and you watching this program have this benefit as well. It's a pass-through. As I am the host of NFL Game Day Morning, that the NFL Network, outstanding staff and assignment editors and information folks, said that John Harbaugh, in regards to Tyler Huntley being able to go with his shoulder injury, he's quote-unquote hopeful that he can go.
Yeah, we know what hope gets you.
Hopeful.
Well, Rich, you see these Sammy Watkins quotes?
He's been working hard in practice, so what is that?
In this league, pretty much everyone is banged up and hurt, said Watkins Wednesday in the quiet corner of the Ravens locker room. I don't want to speak for Lamar and his situation, wherever he's going through with the contracts. I don't know what world he's in, but for me, you got a chance to do something special.
Wow.
He can will his team to the Super Bowl.
That's true.
I don't think he's thinking about it that way.
Yeah.
I hope he hobbles back out there, put him out there for pass plays. That could be wrong. I'm being selfish, but I just want to see him out on the field. What a great thing that would be. To see eight touch the field, we go out there and blow them out. But that's for Lamar and everyone else to figure out.
Well, there you go. If that got back to Lamar, he's like, well, then I got to tweet out to everybody exactly what's going on so they understand I can't give 100%. So maybe that's as much to a message in his locker room than anywhere else. Sammy Watkins returning to the Ravens just in time to spit truth.
Cause a ruckus.
Hashtag. Wow.
For over 40 years, Jim Ross has been the voice of wrestling. Nobody has stories like Jim Ross, and he shares his tales with co-host Conrad Thompson on Grilling JR.
Vince McMahon was the top heel in the Attitude Era. It was a fresh character. It was new. It was material that we had not seen or heard to that date. And we could have created a bigger or better heel.
No.
And we wanted to make more heels, and we tried to make more heels, and we did. But nothing compared to Vince.
The Grilling JR Podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.